Welcome to Voices of NCAJ. We're talking to members of the North Carolina Advocates for Justice about what it means to be a trial lawyer, what it takes to be great at the practice of law, and how being a part of NCAJ enriches their lives and careers. Produced and powered by Law Pods.
Welcome, everyone, to Voices of NCAJ, the podcast for the North Carolina Advocates for Justice. I am Amber Nimix, your host and Director of External Affairs for NCAJ. Before we get started, I'd like to thank today's episode sponsor, Advocate Capital. Advocate is passionate about helping plaintiffs' attorneys get better results for clients, mainly through their AdvoTrack case expense funding service. It allows firms to track case expenses and recover borrowing costs, which makes the net cost of borrowing zero on cases they win. Learn more at advocatecapital.com. My guest today is Lindsay Granados. Lindsay is the owner of Granados Law Group in Cary, where she focuses her practice on criminal defense. She is also one of the newest members of the NCAJ Board of Governors. We have just wrapped up NCAJ annual meeting in Charlotte, where Lindsay was elected to the Board of Governors on Thursday, June 19. Her term on the board begins July 1. Lindsay, congratulations.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me today.
Thank you for being here. So how was convention for you?
So I wish I could have attended the whole thing, but unfortunately this year that was not meant to be just due to some staffing changes that I've had in my office recently. But I was able to make it up for the Women's Caucus meeting specifically and then the luncheon afterwards and had some time to get to see people and peruse kind of the sponsors and the gallery. And so that was, it was really great. And I'm glad I was able to make the trip over just even though it was just for a day.
Yeah. Oh, I was so glad you were able to be there too, even if it was just for a day. Because every, you know, we pack a lot in to those days and every day was great. We love convention so much. It's such a, like, I don't know, such an affirmation, a reaffirmation of everything NCAJ is all about. So we had a terrific time this year. Tell us, as a new member of the board, how long have you been a member of NCAJ? And what was your journey from like new member to board member? How did you get involved to begin with?
You know, I was thinking back about when I joined NCAJ, and I think it was right after I started practicing in 2008. Somebody had told me, hey, if you want to do criminal defense, you really need to join NCAJ. And they were absolutely right. I got involved because of the listserv, and I really learned how to practice law because of the criminal law listserv and the wonderful people and the defense attorneys from across the state that were on the listserv. And that has been an invaluable source of education and information for me through the years. I can't tell you how many times I have posed a question on the listserv, and then within, you know, a few minutes or even an hour or two, I've gotten a phone call from an attorney in a different part of the state who's willing to give me the answer and give me the time from their day to be able to help me in my practice. And so I have been so grateful for the listserv throughout the year since 2008. So I guess it's coming up close to 20 years now. But yes, NCAJ was actually one of the first groups that I joined right after I started practicing. As to how I have kind of changed through things over the years, I guess a few years ago, I joined the Women's Caucus. I was glad to see that we had a Women's Caucus startup, as that was something that we did not have available when I first began. So that's been a really refreshing and enjoyable section to be a part of. And I'll tell you what, just the energy in the room, even, you know, this past Thursday or Wednesday or whatever day that was that I was over there Thursday, it was just great. And it was so lovely to see these ladies that, you know, I interact with on the listserv, but also when we go to like the women's convention, like the women's retreat that we have. And so I've attended a couple of those. And that's honestly been a fantastic journey with the Women's Caucus. A few years ago, NCA Chris Fialco was actually serving on the North Carolina Sentencing Policy Advisory Commission at the time. And he was wanting to kind of rotate off. He'd been serving in that capacity for a while. And so NCAJ was looking for somebody to assist with replacing Chris at the Sentencing Policy Advisory Commission. And so at that point in time, I was asked if I'd be interested. And I thought that seems like a really interesting and fun thing to do. So I started serving in that role. But I think even before that, I had been through NCAJ, I'd been working in the mock trial. We have, obviously, NCAJ has the mock trial competitions that we put on. And so for many years, I worked, you know, as the Raleigh co-chair along with Christine Schief, and obviously interfaced with some of the most wonderful people a part of NCAJ, Becky Britton, Gordon Weidenhouse. There's so many wonderful people that are involved in mock trial. And so for a little over a decade, I guess I was the co-chair of the Raleigh competition.
You found a lot of ways to sort of like integrate yourself in different areas. That's terrific.
NCAJ has been great. I love NCAJ.
Awesome. Awesome. And so you have also been very active in the criminal defense section and leadership of that section specifically as well, right?
So I've served on the leadership commission for the, I guess, for the criminal defense, primarily in the capacity of having been on the Sentencing Policy Advisory Commission and my role there, but then also fairly recently as it relates to providing information regarding e-courts and the transition that the court's been going through.
Right. Tell us about the e-courts journey from your perspective.
I was originally, so I practice here in Wake County, and I have been, at the time eCourts was getting ready to roll out about a year prior, I was serving as the president of the Wake County Academy of Criminal Trial Lawyers, which is just kind of like really like a local NCAJ type scenario. We have CLEs and meet monthly, and we try to at least have our foot in the door for any of the conversations that take place around the courthouse. And so in my capacity of that organization, I was requested by Judge Ridgway to sit, who is our chief resident Superior Court judge, to sit in on the eCourts implementation committee meetings as we were heading into that process of going live.
And what have been the greatest challenges? I mean, I know there've been plenty, but I mean, in terms of, I've watched it from the outside, but you've been sort of integral to this process. What have been the greatest challenges?
So I think some of the greatest challenges have been a lack of communication, effective communication from AOC to criminal defense practitioners to be able to help us understand what it is that we need to do during the rollout and how we need to format our documents or how we need to name our documents. Or, you know, there have been some training videos that were provided by AOC, but they weren't terribly informative, and a lot of them were not really, they were not really delving into the issues that specifically criminal defense practitioners are facing. I would say that like one of the biggest challenges is that the system is not built for the volume of cases that we have in counties like Wake and Mecklenburg District Court. And consequently, there have been so many slowdowns across the system that it makes doing the practice of law like we have been almost impossible. Whereas you used to be so accustomed to just pulling out a shuck and, you know, a continuance would literally take as long as it would take to have somebody write down the next court date on the file. Now it takes, you know, the micro transactions of the daily life in the courthouse add up. And it just makes everything take so much longer. There are some advantages to e-courts, absolutely. But as far as like a district court practice, it's not set up to deal with the volume. Other courts like Superior Criminal and Superior Civil are not as deeply, you know, having the struggles and the difficulties that the district court practitioners are. So if your practice areas are in one of those areas, it may not be causing you as many problems as it is for folks like me who are in district court on a daily basis.
Where, in your estimation, where are folks who practice in district criminal court on the timeline if like we were from like wandering in the wilderness to at the promised land where all the kinks are worked out and everything? I mean, obviously you have no way of knowing, but do you have any best guesses? Do you, since you seem to be one of the like reluctant Moseses who are leading this journey?
Well, definitely those of us that were in Johnson, Harnett, Lee and Wake counties and rollout phase one of this whole pilot program, we were definitely, you know, wandering in the wilderness for quite some time. And I feel like we still have been. I think that right now where we stand, the functionality of the program is what it is. It's not going to get any better than it presently is. And I think that everyone from the district attorneys to the judges to the criminal defense practitioners and the clerks, they all have, you know, a very fundamental understanding now of what the processes are. So we're kind of, you know, in a better situation as far as that's concerned, because we know what to do and how to do it. The problem is that it still takes way too long, and it still does not, there's just a lot of issues that are still causing problems on a macro level as far as like this whole rollout is concerned. And I'm told that right now they just went live in July with track 9, and I think the next track is supposed to roll out in October of this year. So that will be track 10, and then the last track is business court. So we're very close to the end of the implementation rollout across the state, which will be pretty amazing when it's all said and done. It's clearly been a huge feat to be able to get this. It's a big lift. You know, that's always been how it's a big lift from the very get-go to be able to get this off the ground and taking over and replacing the old systems that were in place. So we're close to the end of this process. I think it'll be early next year when the last track is supposed to roll out. But my understanding is that there may be like a version 2.0 that they may roll out fairly quickly after that to do some updates across the system. But that has yet to be officially confirmed.
So we have no idea how much farther we have to go before we get to the promised land.
Basically.
So when you decided to become a lawyer, did you have any idea that you would spend so much time on this sort of thing?
Oh, gosh, no. I am really not a techie kind of person. In fact, like I joke that, you know, I married a technical IT guy for a reason. He's the one who helps me out with anything in my office that starts to break. I'm the kind of person who would rather just like hit the device and throw it at the door, right? Like throw it at the window or something. And when I get frustrated with it. But yeah, I'm definitely not like a technophile by nature. So this has definitely been a forced adoption of of new ways of doing business.
So how did you decide to become an attorney?
I think I was in eighth or ninth grade. I grew up in Oklahoma. And I was one of my, I think it was ninth grade, my civics teacher came to me and said, hey, we're getting ready to start a new program in our community that is to hopefully help juveniles and to also be able to help try to reduce recidivism. And at that time, I didn't even know what recidivism was. But she said, we're going to start a teen court program. And so I got involved with the teen court program in ninth grade in Oklahoma, and helped like recruit other kids to come and join. And for those not familiar with teen court, it's a wonderful program that is a diversion program that allows juveniles to be taken away out of the regular court system and set into a setting that is very court-like. You have teen jurors, teen attorneys, and then you actually do have a practicing attorney or a judge who will come in and act as the judge. And the teens will listen to the evidence that is put on by the teen juror, will listen to the evidence put on by the teen attorneys, and then they will decide on a constructive sentence for that juvenile based on the facts of the case. So I got involved at that point with teen court and just thought, gosh, well, this sounds like a really fun thing to do for a living. And I thought I wanted to be a prosecutor for the rest of my life. So that's why I ultimately went to law school.
Oh, wow. And so you were on the other side of the V when you set out on your law school journey then, huh?
So I had never been, there were no lawyers in my family at all, nobody to look at for that type of scenario as far as guidance, but just my family was very supportive of being one of the teen attorneys. And so I got involved with that program and got to know some kids who were struggling and tried to do my best to help them. And that was kind of like, this is a really cool. I think I could see myself doing that.
And so how did you become interested in being a criminal defense attorney?
Yeah, I went to law school because I wanted to be a prosecutor. I thought I would be a career prosecutor. But interestingly enough, I graduated from law school in December of 07. And that's obviously heading into taking the bar in 08. And that's when the economy just decided to not cooperate
with anybody.
And yeah. So there were not a lot of jobs at that point in time for prosecutors because there just weren't. So I ended up getting on the court-appointed list at that point in time and began to take on clients and cases. And I will forever be grateful for that opportunity to start out practicing. I didn't know anything. I just had to ask a lot of questions and I had to join NCAJ and get on the listserv. And thankfully, so many people were willing to mentor me from afar and be willing to take time out of their day to answer questions to help a new lawyer out.
Wow. Did you go to law school here in North Carolina?
No, I grew up, I went to law school at Stetson in Florida.
Oh, okay. And how did you get to North Carolina to start practicing?
I did not like Florida, was not a fan of the weather, which honestly, it feels like Florida out there today with how gross it feels. It's so hot and humid today. But Florida was like that every day. And I really did not love Florida. So I loved my school. Stetson was fantastic, but I knew that I did not want to stay in Florida. So when I was getting close to being done, I have an uncle who lives here in the Cary area. And he said, why don't you just come up and take a look around? So my husband and I took a weekend and we came up here and just kind of we came in kind of the Triangle area. And then we also went over to Charlotte and we fell in love with the Triangle area. So the day after I graduated, we loaded up the U-Haul and drove up here.
Awesome. Wow. So while you were doing that and taking cases on the appointed list, was there a particular case or a particular moment where it sort of crystallized for you and you said, yep, criminal defense, that's it?
You know, I would say that it was honestly probably the first time that I won my first jury trial on a misdemeanor appeal. That was probably the best moment in terms of realizing, okay, maybe I should do this and not be a prosecutor. But I did later become a prosecutor for a couple of years. But that was kind of like, all right, I think I could do this. And I think that this is something that I really enjoy doing. It took maybe a while for me to feel like I got my footing, to kind of get my mindset in the right way to help clients. But at some point, yeah, I think when I won my first jury trial, that was kind of a moment that was like, all right, I could do this.
What was the case?
It was actually a communicating threats case on appeal.
Oh, wow. Okay. And you won?
Yep. The jury came back in 8 minutes.
Oh, that's a pretty decisive win.
I went to the bathroom, and while I was in the bathroom, the bailiff came and got me and said, you got to go back in. I was like, what? I just got out of there. So that was pretty fun.
Cool. So now that you are a member of the NCAJ Board of Governors, I mean, there'll be orientation and, you know, you'll be told what your specific duties and responsibilities are. But do you have any ideas about what you hope to help NCAJ accomplish or what you personally would like to bring to the board in your role as a member of the BOG?
I have been very grateful to the leadership of this organization and how they have set such a wonderful tone and tenor for where we're going in the future. Specifically, I've gotten to know Karma Henson through the Women's Caucus and have really enjoyed her leadership there. And I'm grateful that she asked me to be on the board this year. I've also been the beneficiary of seeing some very wonderful individuals like Andy Banzoff, who is just coming out of the leadership role of NCAJ, but has served for many years on the criminal defense section leadership and been around for that. And, you know, I think there are some absolutely fantastic people that we have in leadership, and I think the world of them. I really do hope that no matter what the issues are that come up before the Board of Governors, my goal is to simply be able to listen to the wonderfully informed people around me, to be able to take the benefit of their past knowledge and experience. And certainly as I'm rolling onto the board in a new, I guess, person capacity, I want to make sure that I listen to the people that have served in this role for a couple of years now and be able to kind of take my cues from them. But I really do hope to continue the wonderful direction that NCAJ has been going in for many years, to be able to continue our legislative efforts and endeavors down at the General Assembly and be able to set us up for the next decade. Because I think that there have been so many changes that have been made in this last decade that have set us up and helped us become the organization we are now. And I think that we have the tremendous capacity to create a better situation for our members and for our clients moving forward in the next decade.
That sounds good. What has being an NCAJ member meant to you personally and professionally?
I would say NCAJ has been probably the biggest defining professional membership that I've had in my career. As I mentioned, just being able to gain the knowledge of wonderful people on the listserv from day one up until now, it's really been super meaningful to me to be able to answer the questions now that you know, the younger lawyers are posing on the listserv to be one of the people who reaches out, like somebody else reached out to me, and be able to pay that forward. That just has like a tremendous amount of meaning to me, to be able to be in that position to have those answers that I didn't have 18 years ago.
Well, that's fabulous. That is a really powerful legacy. I'm so glad that that's what NCHA is for you. That's awesome. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for agreeing to join the Board of Governors and for all of the work and service you have given NCHA so far already. We really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of NCHA, and I tell everybody who's a new lawyer that they need to join, because this is a great resource for people and so full of wonderful attorneys that are willing to give of their time and their energy and their knowledge. And then you go to something like convention or the Women's Caucus retreat, and to be around people who are encouraging you in what you do, it's just a really palpable, wonderful feeling to be a part of an organization like this. So thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be asked to be serving on the Board of Governors, and I look forward to my term and to seeing where NCHA will go in the next few years.
Awesome. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thank you.
All right. Before we go, I would like to thank our Circle of Leadership program sponsors, Brown, Moore & Associates, Edwards, Kirby, Henson, Forrest, Johnson & Groninger, PLLC, Law Offices of James Scott Farron, the Law Offices of John McCabe, and Whitley Law Firm. These firms are supporting NCHA's mission as founding members of the Circle of Leadership at the gemstone level. Find out how your firm can join the Circle of Leadership at ncaj.com/circle. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And if you have not renewed your membership, please go right now to ncaj.com/renew and do so. June 30th is the deadline.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Voices of NCHA. For more information on the North Carolina Advocates for Justice and how to join or support NCHA, please visit our website at www.ncaj.com.